special meeting of the Strategic Planning Committee, a meeting of January 13th, 2021 to order. We have a quorum, and the first order of business is the election of a chairperson. I am serving as temporary chair, and I recognize Commissioner Sweezy for purposes of a nomination.
Okay, I'd like to put the name of Dominic Payne for chairman of Strategic Planning Committee.
Thank you, Commissioner Sweezy. Is there a second?
I second that motion.
Seconded by Commissioner Taylor. Any other nominations?
I move that nominations be closed.
Before I entertain that motion, having no other nominations, I'll just take a roll call. All in favor of the nomination of Dominic Payne as chair, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Congratulations, Commissioner Payne, and you now have the gavel.
Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate it, and thank you for the chairmanship. The agenda would be public comments relative to the agenda items.
Vice chair.
Don't we have vice chairman first before we get there?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're correct, Bill. Yep.
Chris?
Election of.
Yeah, I'd like to nominate John Avedisian for vice chairman.
Second.
Sweezy.
Second, DeBella.
A nomination. Do I hear any other nominations? I'll entertain a vote for John.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
You got a problem here.
Beg your pardon?
Dom, you on?
You on?
I'm on.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Approval of the minutes of April 24th, 2018.
So moved, Sweezy.
Motion moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries to approve the minutes of April 24th, 2018. The next thing on the agenda is discussion of the strategic plan. There's three items, I believe, that we're going to talk about. The first one.
Excuse me, Chairman Payne, before we go in, I think you were having a little technical difficulty there, and I think you were speaking, but at least I did not hear. I don't think others did. I think during that time period, you might have been asking for public comment, but that might not have been heard. You want to try just one more time to give an opportunity for public comment?
Certainly, John. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Public comment. If anybody is out there that would like to speak, I'll leave it open for a minute. Okay. Hearing none, we'll move forward. And under six, discussion of the strategic planning, there's, I believe, three things that we want to talk about.
You got some difficulties there.
Can you hear me?
I can't.
Start six over, you. Please.
All right, we're discussing the strategic planning, the bio.
Lost you again.
When you put your head down, Dom, we don't hear you.
I'm sorry. So we're going to hear grease and oil fats from Scott Jellison, I believe.
Scott?
I lost Commissioner Payne as well. The three items are what? Biodiesel.
Biodiesel, there was a landfill with the PFAS, and the the trash problem that we
solid waste.
And I believe landfill with the PFAS and the trash issues, we're going to take up into an executive session if you feel that I think some of those issues need to be in an executive session.
Okay. Thank you. So this is Scott Jellison. So if we take the first topic, as part of looking at revenue opportunities, and I would bet to guess this is probably at least a year and a half ago, we were invited down to New Haven, which is our counterpart, New Haven Regional Authority, which runs the wastewater side for New Haven region, and they had engaged a company called REA, which is Resource Recovery Systems, and they are working in a partnership with UConn to develop a biodiesel process, which basically takes fats, oils, and grease out of the waste stream of the influent. And when we say influent is what flows into the sewer treatment plant, and extract fats, oils, and grease, which mainly come from the restaurants, and extract that from the influent at the plant. And there's a pilot down there, and we physically went down there to see it. They actually take the fats, oils, and grease out of the waste stream and actually produce a biodiesel. It is on a very small scale, and in our discussions with UConn and REA, obviously the technology is, it's a pilot program at this point. Although it's very successful, very highly technical, it is on a very small scale. And through our discussions with UConn, I suggested that until the technology becomes and gets further developed, and this same group is working on a project, we just authorized to go into a 30% design in Danbury, Connecticut, for the same type of system. I said, you know, one of our biggest challenges is we don't want to collect the fats, oil, and grease at the plant like they're doing in New Haven. That's very inefficient for one reason. The grease, oils, and fats, or fats, oils, and grease, is a major maintenance nightmare for us and all wastewater companies. So the problem that we have is it's almost like the food digestion technology when we went to see. In order for food digestive technology to work, you've got to have the food. In order for the fats, oils, and grease technology for biodiesel, you've got to have the fats, oil, and grease. And the best way for us, the MDC, to collect that fats, oils, and grease is not to let it flow through our system, only to collect and cause major problems in our system, in clogging the system. But let's actually use UConn and its students to actually go out and educate the 1,600 restaurateurs that actually are dumping this fats, oils, and grease illegally, and educate them as to why it's so important to actually comply with the state and the MDC's ordinances to actually collect the grease, and then develop a program where it could be collected and therefore collected and then brought to a facility to actually extract and turn this product into a biodiesel. So we have agreed with UConn and REA that we're focused right now on the education piece and the collection piece of fats, oils, and grease. And we're monitoring and watching the developments that occur in Danbury to see if they can actually design and build a plant that will be a plant that can produce to the levels that they have identified they can in terms of, you know, in terms of the revenue stream that they have predicted that they can. So We're in the early stages of simply educating and collection, and COVID has really kind of slowed us down in the terms of the educational piece. We were hoping to be in a phase where we would be actually developing a collection piece, where we would actually have an MDC truck utilizing UConn students to actually go out and encourage the restaurateurs to properly dispose of this fog without dumping it down the sink. And as I've said before, the fog is like, it's a paste, it's a mortar, and all of the rocks and the stones and the bottles and the things that are not supposed to be in the sewer system are the brick. And I use an example of the siphon that goes under the Whitehead Common Highway at the Convention Center. That is a 72-inch pipe and a 54-inch pipe, and those siphons the siphon is simply just a pipe that goes under the ground and is an elevation of about a foot, and it works just like a P-trap under your sink, and Chris Stone knows what a P-trap is, but it's just a matter of having enough pressure and head on one side of the pipe to push the rest of it through to the other side by going underneath and up. We've spent on average about $300,000 a year to clean those siphons. So grease oils and fats oils and grease is a major problem for any wastewater utility. And our challenge with REA and with UConn is to educate and then collect, develop a real program that will able to collect this, this byproduct. And then once you have that in place, then you can determine how much capacity do you have, what is the capacity, what can you use this for, and how much energy can you produce or biodiesel could you produce with the capacity that we have. So that's kind of the stage we're in right now, and very thankful of Professor Dr. Richard Parnas, who is really leading the charge here on the technical side from UConn, as to how this technology can be put into a commercial venue.
Thank you, Scott. I greatly appreciate that.
Commissioner Payne?
Thank you. Yes, Chairman.
Ray?
Yep, go ahead, Ray.
Sweezy.
Yep.
I'd like to ask Scott a question. Quick, Scott, you said there's approximately 1,600 restaurants in the district. How many? There is an ordinance right now, right? Correct? That they have to dispose of it correctly?
Correct.
How many gallons or how many restaurants do you think are doing that? And at this time, do they use a private hauler that picks up this material? And that, do they bring that material to us for disposal, or do they bring it somewhere else?
Well, they can bring it anywhere they want. Yes, to your first question, the 1,600 restaurateurs, they're required to comply with the state of Connecticut DEEP regulations, and in turn, the MDC has an ordinance that marries and adopts the regulations set by DEEP. So they're mandated by DEEP to do this, and we have an ordinance that complies and mandates them to do it as well. The problem, Commissioner, is the practical side of it. What typically happens is the equipment that is utilized is relatively small tank systems, and then there's a system that is capable. You can use it's almost like a septic tank, 1,000 gallon, 2,000 gallon septic tank that you can utilize. The problem is just a practical one, that it's a pain in the butt and it's not very easy. Most restaurateurs, they're worried about, everything but maintaining the fats, oils, and grease equipment. And so it's really it's a heavy issue for our staff. We go out and we're trying to cite people. And as you know, we've dealt with this on numerous times. Most of our restaurateurs do not own the building. They rent. So you have a circumstance where the water bill is in the name of the building owner. the and we've made some changes to that to effectuate and be more capable of finding people. But it's very difficult when you don't have the ability to find someone because they don't own the building and they're not paying the water bill. The water bill is actually in the name of the restaurant, of the owner, not the restaurateur. Now, we have made some changes where we do now, in fact, put the water bill in the name of the restaurant owner, the building. This can be a complex of a mall type of event where there's one restaurant and five other businesses. But when it comes down to it, when you want to put a lien on the property, the restaurateur is gone. You know, they go out of business or they don't pay their water bill. And so it's a really difficult thing to enforce. Even with the fines that we've imposed, it's a really difficult thing to enforce. And that's why what UConn we have talked to them about is, and UConn is looking to talk directly to the restaurateurs without the MDC so that there's not a fear of reprisal. So the goal of the students is to really educate the customers as why this is environmentally important to comply and not be afraid of talking to the students getting a fine from the MDC. So it's really an educational approach rather than a fine approach.
Are you, Scott, are you going to be able to come up with what a potential revenue would be if you had 16, if we were picking up 1,600 restaurants or 1,200 restaurants versus
That's why this first phase is so important, right? So we first have to understand the capacity. We first have to understand how much fat, salts, and grease is actually being produced in our district. And then we can quantify that, and then we can use that information to actually apply it to, you know, a real, you know, is there an ability to make money off of this waste stream. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. We are watching diligently the activity that occurs in Danbury, just like we did with the heat recovery plant that we built. As you know, we're making $1.7 million a year off of that facility. Regional Water Authority, Wastewater Authority, same utility that's doing this pilot with this same group of individuals, they built a heat recovery plant before we did. And we were about 2 to 3 years behind them. And they had lots of problems with their facility in its operation. And it was actually down for 2 or 3 years. And we utilized those lessons learned in building our plant. So we're looking at doing the same thing with Danbury, looking to see how it, first look at the capacity of the waste stream and the practical ability to actually collect it. As you know, when we went down to look at the waste stream on the food side, the technology is perfect, right? The technology works. As they told us, the biggest challenge is actually getting the food to feed the monster, to feed the boilers, to feed the digestion. So that's what our first step is in this process.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah. Bill DiBella. Parnas, Professor Parnas is the technology. He has the patents on the technology. And they do have some pro formas that they have been bouncing around based on what they gave to Danbury. And of course, as Scott said, what we want to make sure is that the technology does work. The question becomes, does it work at that volume and what volume? And that's one of the other issues. But with the outreach by the UConn students, it's much more economical and it's less threatening, as Scott said. So the other thing is that what we're looking at, we're going to look at now is there available money in Washington under the energy side to get a grant to talk about the construction of a major facility that would be able to process this stuff. But like Scott says, we don't want to get, you know, the cart before the horse. We want to also know what the capacity is that we can accumulate and what's out there and how it reacts. And basically that's the food stuff or the fuel for this thing. So we're going slow. And as Dan, we pointed out, Danbury is in the, they've just, I guess on Wednesday, they submitted to REA. They submitted to them the payment for the 1/3 architecturals. So they're moving right down the road on it. They're convinced that the technology makes sense. So, and our attitude is, if we can see that technology works and that the recovery is done based on volume, it'll give us a great insight as we move all the way down the road to get this to a functioning revenue stream. And they're very, very positive on it. They're looking at using the product with fuel cells, standby generators, because of the low degree or almost no degree of carbon that exists within that process. So we're very excited about the issue, and we're dealing directly with the University of Connecticut people that have the patents. And we see this as not only a great environmental tool, but also a significant revenue stream for the district.
Commissioner Sweezy, Bill, isn't it also could be a large savings in our maintenance account as far as,
well,
we wouldn't be doing nowhere near as much maintenance if we were able to capture, say, 80% of these fats and greases?
Well, as Scott did point that out, and when he said that it's costing us now, what, Scott, $300,000 or $400,000 to pull it out down on Fish Fry Street on a good year?
Fish Fry is one of our biggest problems, which is up in the northern part of the city of Hartford. And we have a lot of grease oils and fats, in that area. So we're actually doing a pilot. We're actually looking at we're doing this ourselves, and we are getting support from UConn and REA. But we're going to actually pilot a piece of equipment, which is about $45,000, that is supposedly able to remove grease oils and fats from our pump stations, which is better than at the plant, because as you know, that pump station is probably, quote, 5 miles from, or 7 miles as a crow flies from the plant. But we want to get, the important point is we want to get the grease out as soon as possible. We don't want to try and collect it at the plant like Regional's doing. It's the worst place to collect it, because you're dealing with all that pain of what it causes with maintenance and overflows and just collapses. I mean, it's a significant problem in the sewer system operations. So we want to get it out before it gets into the pipe.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Torres through you to Scott. Do we have a time table for when that report might be completed and available? That's being done by UConn and REA.
Yes. So we, unfortunately, with COVID, we've been kind of stagnant. We, you know, our plan last summer was to utilize UConn students to actually scour. We have a grease oils and fats team, which MDC staff that actually deals with this every day. And they work through utility services. And so our permitting and our compliance and all that good stuff is done through utility services through it's part of the command center. Our plan was to attack that group of 1,600 or the majority of the restaurants last summer. And we just couldn't do it because of everything that was going on. So our goal is hopefully this summer that we start that outreach with the UConn students. UConn has been, obviously, as you know, most of the schools are virtual and learning from home. So the ability to get the students out there on the streets is difficult. But our goal is this coming spring and summer, we'll be utilizing the UConn students to do that outreach.
Also, I mean, I've seen some of this technology. It's been around for a while. Folks have been collecting oil and grease from restaurants and converting it into diesel fuel. So it's a fairly simple process. It's not terribly complicated, but it does make a lot of sense to one, at least from an expense basis, the maintenance of our equipment and getting that grease out is a big ticket item. And I think that until we get that report, then we can try to do some kind of a cost benefit analysis to see whether or not we have the volume to make it work, what the costs are that would entail putting together the kind of machinery and the things that we need to do. I think it's critical. I'd like to see if we could somehow accelerate the process, because I think it's a very important one, and there's a lot of money that's really going down the tubes here while we wait for all this information to come down. So to whatever we can do to try to get that information to move this forward, I think is critical. It's for many reasons, environmentally, cost wise, it's just a very good thing to do.
Yeah, this is Al Taylor. I guess my questions are, one, is there a comparable technology that is currently out there that's being used elsewhere that would give us some idea of how this thing works in the real world? And what's the scalability of this new process that's being developed by the professor from UConn? And I guess I think it's important we take a very careful look at the economic model. Because I agree with you, if we can save ourselves on the back end, and the bogey is what, $300,000 to $400,000. So the question is going to be, what is it going to take at the front end to get this thing organized? And more particularly, if the UConn students, for example, disappear, and then we have to basically put a substitute in place for their actions or activities, what's the economic impact on this type of project in terms of ability to mount it and operate it? But I do think that, yeah, this warrants a good and careful look. I guess also, how is this different from operations where they collect tallow outside and it's then shipped off to rendering operations? Is this so much different from that? Because I see a lot of these containers around or about restaurants, and I'm just curious as to what's the differential with regard to the fats and oils. And then I guess just the fact that you see the tallow trucks picking up in various places.
Commissioner, to your question, the closest comparison to this technology is, I'm not even sure you could call it technology. There are diesel companies, manufacturers that are actually simply mixing fats, oils, and grease with their diesel, and they're basically blending it to a certain rate, and then they're allowed, there's been legislation passed through Congress and through the administration, that they get credits for a biodiesel mixture, And so that's working great, but it's really just a mixing mechanism. This is very different. This is a chemical process of taking pure fat oils and grease and turning it into biodiesel. So it's very, very complicated. It's a very, very highly intensive chemistry experiment. And I know that myself and my staff went down to New Haven to look at their operation, and this operation was built in basically three roll-off steel containers, lots of equipment, lots of highly complicated chemistry extraction of the fat oil and grease to turn it into a byproduct of biodiesel. So the question is, and I think the chairman mentioned this, I think others have said, Commissioner Torres, what is the viability of this? We know the technology works. I've seen it. It does produce biodiesel. It's down in New Haven. It is factual. The question is, with all of these technologies, like the food digestive process, are you able to turn it into a productive revenue life cycle cost analysis where, to your point, Commissioner Taylor, you're saving $300,000. Now, and when I say $300,000, that's just one location. We'd be saving much more than $300,000 if we can get the fat oils and grease out of our system. But that was just one example of an area that is a really problematic area for the MDC. We know that they can do the chemistry because it's being done in New Haven. The question is, can they turn it into a production model that will be cost effective and the owners, meaning the MDC, can make money? That's where Danbury comes in. And Danbury, they're probably a little further. They're a year and a half ahead of us because they're in the middle of doing construction right now and they're doing the design work. So we've got a lot of this is a very positive thing that could potentially not only solve a major maintenance problem for us, but also create and generate a major revenue source where, you know, the revenue source issue is has to be further developed. But this could be a very, very positive in terms of the extraction of the fat oils and grease from our system through this communication effort with UConn.
Yeah. Commissioner Sweezy, Scott, Commissioner Taylor and myself went to a plant in Southington at least four times. It's food to waste to energy. These guys said fats, oils, greases are their number one product that they would like to get because it burns the hottest. And with the food mixture, they can make the energy quicker and more efficient and more profitable. So there's going to be competition here also, because that's where, like Al said, some of these trucks are going there right now. And I know that plant in Southington does not have a problem getting product, because Coca-Cola brings them product on a monthly basis. They're getting product out of Vermont or New Hampshire at least twice a week. Tractor trailers are coming in. So I think this is a great project.
Yep.
I think it's got to be really worked, fine-tuned to be profitable.
Well,
okay, there's a lot of, you know, there's going to be competition. And if we can get a grant or any kind of grant out of Washington, this is a home run. I mean, this can be very profitable.
Well, let me just, Commissioner DiBella, we've had this. I mean, the technology they're using is different than the guys in Southington in terms of what they produce and the quality of what they produce, because the biodiesel they're using, they're mixing now. What they want to do is introduce it as full strength biodiesel. And the significance there is that in the standby generators that they use most of this stuff in, to meet the environmental standards. They have to meet the generator has standards that they have to meet to be able to use it in order for the guarantees and the warranties of these products to work. And this, they have a technology, in my opinion, but I'm no expert on it, as he's developed, that's rather superior. And I think, Scott, you saw that. And they also have the economics of utilization of the product in to develop what a total, as you asked, you said, Al, a total issue of pro forma that would provide the cost benefit and the cost of operation and everything else. And our only concern right now is not that the technology works, but it works to the level that they're purporting it and at the volumes that they're going to do. So we're really in an earlier stage on this technology. Wouldn't you say that, Scott? Scott? Anyway, that's where we stand relative to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I was trying to get off a moot, but yeah, I agree 100% with you. Is that, you know, this is, you know, we're not blinded by the practical side of this, right? We know that with the food and Commissioner Sweezy, you're absolutely correct. There's competition. We've got the benefit of the competition because our goal with UConn, we've been trying for years to find our way, meaning find people to comply, and it's not working. So the goal is with UConn is to educate our restaurateurs to say, there's a benefit for you and for your communities. I mean, just think about the message when we've talked about this with UConn. If everybody complied with the grease, oils, and fats, or the fats, oils, and grease ordinance, the MDC and its member towns would say, pick a number, $2 million a year in maintenance. So that reduces everyone's tax base, it reduces everyone's cost, and that's really what we want the UConn students to do for us. Now, whether or not the capacity of that grease, oil, and fats that we collect at the restaurant and the trucking and actually getting it to the plant, whatever that plant might be, is cost effective is a whole different animal. But I would say to you, and I think we all learned this at the with the food facility, legislation mandates that if there is a food digester within 20 mile radius of you, you are mandated by law to bring your waste there. So we can utilize that same legislation if that helped us in terms of the competition. But I think the first step is we first got to identify, we've got to educate the restaurateurs, we've got to realize what capacity we're even talking about. We can't quantify this right now. We only know that our certain areas within the sewer system are clogged and with constant maintenance. But to try and figure out the volume that we're talking about and how much it would cost to actually collect that on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, that's what the UConn students are going to do for us.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there any other questions from commissioners?
This is Commissioner Bush. I have a quick question. I'm sure you guys have done the more detailed studies about it, but I guess some of the questions that I have, and I'm sure these are answered properly. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. I just the questions, I don't know if the answers already are out there, but how much of this particular type of waste needs to be processed to make it profitable? And how much of the waste is actually available? Right. I'm sure that study exists. I would love to see that. The other thing is who's interested in obtaining this waste product, if it is profitable and there are people already doing it. You know, I know that competition was already mentioned. How many people are going to compete to get this product? If they're throwing it away, that's it. Those are the questions I had. I'm sure that information must exist at this point in the conversation.
Commissioner Bush, this is Scott Jellison. I'd offer that we don't have. And that's why the next phase with UConn students is so important. We don't really have a full understanding of how much waste we're talking about because people aren't complying, and we don't really have a good feel. We can tell you how much waste comes to our plant, you know, by truck. We have no idea how much of this fats, oil, and grease comes by way of pipe. You know, the piping that comes. To the plant. So it's a really not a very scientific guesstimate on what we're producing. But I would tell you that I agree with you. I've heard and I've seen stories where the cross connection, we've talked about this numerous times, and well before my time, the cross connection inspection, so that's really done by mandated by the state of Connecticut DPH, and we're required to test all sprinkler systems and backwater valves at residential and businesses. And we had at one point a fee, and we have a fee for our staff to test that. And there was a lot of concern from the tax paying commercial industry to say you're competing with our business. So I don't disagree with you. It's a very good point that when we go through this exercise, we're going to have to look at, okay, we're going to be somehow collecting this fats, oils, and grease. Right now it's going somewhere. Right now some waste hauler is bringing it to the MDC, and they're charging their customer X dollars for bringing it to the MDC, and now they're going to lose that revenue. So no doubt that is going to be a very hot topic when we get in if this proceeds further, of how we may be making money, but someone's losing money, and that's got to be considered as part of this discussion.
Mr. Chairman? Commissioner Torres? If I may?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't spoken yet. I'd like to speak.
I think Commissioner Payne is having, there he is, he's coming back now.
I'm right here. Yep. Sorry about that, John. I was having computer problems. Where are we at now?
Commissioner LeBeau is asking to speak. We're still on the same, the discussion item.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Dom. Very interesting discussion. The last point that you just raised, Scott, I think is very important because I think money is a really important issue here. On all sides. And I just want to ask a very brief question on in the technology you're talking about right now, where is the extraction take place? Does it take place at the restaurant, or does it take place in the pipes outside the restaurant? Does it take place at the pumping station? Where is it envisioned that would take place?
Commissioner, to your question, right now, the pilot study that's going on at our counter or our sister agency in New Haven, they're extracting the fat cells and grease at the plant, and we believe that is the most inefficient place to collect it because it's already caused the maintenance problem. So all you're trying to do is collect enough fat cells and grease.
I hear you saying that. So where are we proposing?
So we're proposing our goal is to actually extract it at the restaurant by getting people to comply with the state.
Okay. Let me follow up on that, because that's what I thought you were saying, and I wanted to just follow up on that. And I agree with that. This is sort of, I can't help but having an analogy here. This is like having cholesterol in your blood, and it gets clogged in certain places and you die. And this is screwing up the system, and it's very similar. It's fats, oils, and grease. But the best way to prevent that is to prevent it from going into the system to begin with. And then treating it. But the other point is, it seems to me that, you know, if we've been trying to do this through fines and through inspections and it hasn't worked, maybe a more positive way to look at this would be, and let me just say as a possibility, as you go into this, thinking about it, creating a more positive incentive for the restaurants and the fat producers. I don't think public good necessarily is going to be enough to encourage them. You know, it's wonderful. We're all encouraged. Everybody, easy to pay lip service to the environment. But when you're working and you're in a restaurant, things are going a mile a minute and people work in restaurants will tell you how hard they work. You know, they're rinsing stuff down the drain. It's going. And it's going to be, they're going to take, if you have to change their habits, I think there may need to be a, not just a public good incentive, but a financial incentive that we should look at the possibility of, if we're going to be saving a lot of money down the line and we're going to be able to get something that we can actually make money on, then I think that perhaps we should look at sharing that with the restaurants and as a way of helping to increase the incentive. And all I'm saying is that might be a possibility. It's not something necessarily has to happen, but I think we should look at that.
Thank you, Commissioner, I'd like to say to you that we actually agree with that 100%, and we actually offered that. I offered to UConn as part of the program that we want to incentivize good behavior, and so that might include the lack of having to pay the fees associated with the fat, oils, and grease program, and also it may be an incentive, and that's why we talked about, and this is where we get into the question that Commissioner Bush mentioned and others about the interaction with the private market. So we've got people to consider. We've got people who are making money off of collecting this, and we've got concerns that we don't want to interfere in our tax base, right? We don't want to encourage our tax base to lose money. That's not what we're here for. But we do want to encourage good behavior by removing this from our waste stream. So we have to come up with a solution, to your point, that will incentivize not only the restaurateur who doesn't own a building, who's just paying rent and doesn't really care, about worrying about whether or not the water bill gets paid, versus the collection which they're paying or not paying to get it. So you're absolutely right. There's a positive solution here, which may include, and this all has to get rolled into the revenue stream versus the cost of doing business and operations, of whether or not it makes sense for us to incentivize our customer base, the restaurateurs, to follow a program that they will benefit from, and we won't hurt the private industry, and we will actually possibly make money doing it. Agreed, 100%.
Right. Commissioner Payne? Dominic? Bill DiBella?
I don't see him.
I think we've lost Commissioner Payne.
Okay, Bill DiBella. Again, I think that's a good, Scott's right. But when we're starting to look at this, it's also the quality and the cost of producing the product that becomes critical if you're going to be using it in backup generators and things of that nature, whether you're mixing it or whether you're using it as the primary fuel. So there's a whole series of things that we're dealing with as we look at this technology and its ability to be viable and competitive in the marketplace. But we know one thing, it will have a big impact on us if we can clean it out of our system and still make money on it.
Yes, Commissioner Torres, I have just a quick question for Don, for Scott. Besides the $300,000 to $400,000 for the maintenance, is there any other maintenance that's being done that adds to the to this cost?
So Just so you know, we're mandated. We have 1,200 miles of sewer pipe, and we're mandated by the state and EPA to clean that system every 5 years. And so, as you can imagine, that's a huge task. And when you spend, and I'm going to use an example, everyone knows the area I'm talking about. We're talking about the bridge that spans over the Whitehead-Collin Highway, and it's right almost diagonal across from what's the name of the street right across from there? You come down from Prospect, and you dump you right onto onto Columbus Boulevard. What is it, Birch? Anyways, you know, between the Candy Cane Building and on one side, and the energy plant or the convention center on the other side, there is literally zero space for our vac trucks.
You're talking about Sheldon Street.
Yes, thank you, Sheldon Street. There's zero space for our staff to work, and we have to work there. It's very, very dangerous. So our staff is there. When we have to clean, we talk about that 300,000. We're talking about up to 3 weeks of every day our staff or a contractor cleaning that pipe. And so what is the value of the safety aspect of it? It's priceless because we have contractors and employees truly at risk because there's no physical space to protect them from the cars and the traffic. And then, you know, you've got 1,200 other miles of sewer pipe that are susceptible, and not every mile is susceptible, but you have specific areas. And this is a kind of like an approach to, we're not suggesting that every restaurateur is going to comply and that's going to solve our problem. And that's why we're looking at the pilot study on Fish Fry. Fish Fry is one of our biggest pump stations. It's one of our biggest problematic pump stations in terms of maintenance and grease, oils and fats, and not oils and grease. And so it's going to be just one component of solving a very important problem. You know, we spend $98 million providing service on the sewer side to our customers. And if $300,000 represents one stretch of, I'm guessing, but I'd say it's probably not more than 200 feet of that, then you can imagine what our other siphons and other areas that have the same problem, and what that creates for our staff. I don't know if I answered your question, Commissioner, but
well basically what I'm trying to get at is, you know, what is the total cost to us to clean out the system, you know, on a yearly basis? Because you're going to make decisions down the road. For instance, if you want to incentivize, you know, the restaurant owners or, you know, folks that are dumping all this stuff into the system, then, you know, we have to do a cost-benefit analysis on this. You know, does it make more sense to try and do something up front, even if it costs us something, but in the long run, we save a lot of money? Or, you know, the original plan was just, you know, to try to see if we can take this stuff and turn it into a biodiesel fuel. You know, all these things are, you know, money issues. We can't make those decisions. We won't know, you know, unless we know what it's, you know, what the big picture is in terms of what the actual cost of cleaning up all the system is on a yearly basis versus what the study says that we might be able to gain if we go into biodiesel fuel. And then that gives us an idea of whether or not, or how we can approach getting the stuff at the front end, which makes a whole lot of sense. That's where we have to get this, whether we incentivize folks, whether we ourselves pick this stuff up. You know, those decisions are going to be predicated on, you know, what is it going to cost us to do that versus what we could save in the long run if we don't have to clean this stuff out.
Commissioner, I agree 100% with you. I apologize, but I just don't. We don't have the questions that you're asking. The questions that you're asking, we don't have the answers to. And what we're trying to do in this program is to get those answers, because we can tell you exactly what pipe and how many feet of pipe we clean every year and by town. We can tell you the problematic areas like Fish Fry and like the Columbus Boulevard, and we can tell you how much those areas cost. But the question would be, is that if we have a surcharge in if we have a surcharge and five homes get surcharged in a storm, was that surcharge associated with fats, oils, and grease, or was it just because it rained hard? I agree 100% with you. The questions you're asking are all right questions. We just need more information, and this program is designed to collect that information.
Right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Sweezy. Could we move on? I think this is going to be coming up over the next year quite a few times. And let's see how the Yukon study moves forward, and then whether we move towards Washington to try to fund this. And it's not going to be decided tonight. So we got a couple other items.
Do we need any action by this committee?
No.
Chris Stone, District Council. No action necessary, Commissioner Lupo.
We'll be back to you on several meetings as we progress with the process. And
yes, we will.
And evaluation.
My hand. This is Commissioner Curry. I've had my hand waving for a while, but no one obviously has seen it. Can I ask a quick question to Scott?
Scott?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Scott, you made an interesting statement about the restaurants. They don't pay the water bill if they're renting, and they don't really care. Any idea how many restaurants rent versus own? And maybe down the road we should look at incentives or encouragement of the landowner that's paying the water bill to realize if their tenant is complying or not complying with ordinances.
Commissioner, I am very smart, but not smart enough to answer that question, but I'm sure Chris Levesque is there and he can tell me exactly the breakdown. But I would tell you that we did pass a ordinance a couple of years ago to address this very issue. And the very issue was, we were initially, we were always sending the bill to the building owner, and we're getting no response. And, you know, it was like, you know, pushing a rope. So we started sending the bill to both the restaurateur and the building owner, and that has helped in communication, so that the building owner knows that, hey, your restaurateur is not paying the bill. I mean, I got a call about 3 weeks ago that said, hey, we had a restaurateur that was renting our building, and I just found out he left 3 months ago, and I just found out that he wasn't paying his water bill. So that happens on a daily basis. But Chris Levesque, do you have that breakdown of the 1,600?
Yeah, it's about the majority of them are tenant occupied. But I want to say it's about 60-70% tenant occupied, based on, and it does fluctuate a little bit.
I'll bet you it's higher than that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I agree.
Yeah, I know we want to move on. This is Commissioner Bucino. I have one quick question for Scott. Scott, you keep mentioning restaurants. What about the two largest facilities in Hartford, Hartford Hospital and St. Francis Hospital, and how much they produce? They feed thousands of people a day. How do we know?
Commissioner, it's a great point. No, it's a great point. That no doubt about it. No doubt about it that these big commercial institutional facilities that are cooking, that there's no doubt that it's not just a small restaurateur that's the problem. It's the I won't name names, but there's
is a famous restaurant down in one part of our towns that I've been in that building 3 or 4 times with 2 feet of water or 3 inches of water in that restaurant, and it wasn't because of anything other than the fact that they forgot to clean out their 1,000 gallon
grease trap.
And so yes, it's not just a little restaurant. It's not just the little cafe. It's big facilities as well. Don't disagree.
I'll hopefully get Commissioner Payne back to move along.
I'm on the phone now. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay. I'm Go sorry ahead. About that. Where are we at the meeting?
We just finished the grease and fats line.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Is it necessary to go into an executive meeting for the other two items, or?
Yes, it is. It will be.
It will be. Okay.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, Chris Stone, District Counsel, the two items that are remaining deal with pending claims in respect to the deep landfill issue and with property or site selection as to the trash issue. So they're both ripe for executive session under Statute 1206B and D. With that, the only people that need to stay from my perspective would be John Myrtle, myself, and Scott Ellison, and Chris Levesque.
Okay. And so we
have to go into an executive session. We have to change the application of the data to get in there.
We have to call in or go into that other website that John sent us.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
We'll have to come back to this meeting and then close this out.
That's correct. I sent an email out about 3:15 today with a new video link for the executive session or a phone call-in. So switch over to that, and I will be muting everybody in this public meeting. So when you return, you'll need to unmute yourself. If you're on a phone, you can do that by pressing *6, maybe *6-7. I'll look into that, and when we return, we can do that. But the executive session is up, and everyone should start switching over now.
Well, you have to make a motion to go into executive session, John.
Right, Mark.
Could be. That's
true. Have it seconded and voted.
Second.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, so we're going to go into executive meeting now. John, I'm going to go by phone call because I was having problems with the computer.
And make a motion to come out of executive session, Commissioner Sweezy.
Second.
Motion made. Do I have a second?
Second, Commissioner Torres.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any comments or questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. We're out of the executive meeting. And we're back into our strategic planning committee meeting. Is there any, we have an opportunity for any general public comment if anybody's on the line, John?
I do not believe there's anyone from the public on the call.
Okay. Any other further questions from commissioners? I entertain a motion.
Move
to adjourn.
Adjournment. Sweezy.
Motion second.
Made by Sweezy and seconded by
Bill DiBella.
Chairman DiBella seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.